Hey everybody, welcome back to Gray Malkin Lane's Patreon channel. I am so excited to be joined by my friend and colleague Kellen Bhatia, the lovely, well, one of the Stepford Cuckoos over at the Homo Superior podcast. Kellen, it's great to see you today. How are you, my friend?
I'm really well, Chad, and please tell me that I'm Phoebe as one of the five. I can
Oh,
be Esme too, but Phoebe, I think, is the one I want.
I was thinking Mindy. I'm just kidding. You can pick whichever one you want.
That's great. I'm great. I'm so glad to be back on Gray Malkin. Love the show, and so glad that we've been able to hang out in person quite
I
recently.
know, like three times, FlameCon a couple times and a little Uncanny Experience action. You are delightful on the show, in on your show and my show and in person. And I'm so happy to hang out with you today. For listeners who may be less familiar, will you share with folks a little bit about who you are and where you come from?
Kalen Bhatia, I live in Washington, D.C. I am a longtime nerd, and X-Men was one of my first loves. I consider Chad to be part of Homo Superior West. I hope you're okay with that, Chad.
I'm so okay with that. Like the Avengers West Coast.
Exactly, right. You've got the San Francisco base, like when the X-Men moved out there, after Decimation, but
Except I'm in Salt Lake City, so I'm like the Mormon Homo Superior. I'm like Rocky Mountain Homo. It's like the Great Lakes Avengers. It's not
We'll call it the Interior West, West
quite.
Coast X-Men. How about that?
Absolutely.
But Homo Superior is the podcast that I'm on. It's me and four other gay men who live in DC. We've been doing the show now for, oh gosh, almost 7 years, which is wild to think about. We focus mostly on the X-Men. We do a little bit of MCU. We like to say that, well, we're a weekly podcast, and every week you get smart analysis and dumb jokes, emphasis on the dumb, because we're a bunch of goofballs. If you've heard our show, and if you haven't, you should check it out. It's like five of your friends who won't shut the fuck up talking about the X-Men all the time.
You guys crack me up. I mostly almost love it as a listener when you like get in little spats and like you're so annoyed with each other and it's so cute. I because you guys are best friends and you can tell you're just hanging out and having fun. You guys have been running for a long time now. How long?
Almost 7 years now. So we
That's
started in early
amazing.
2017. We started with the no one loved this era, the Resurrection era, when they brought back X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold. It was not great. Most of us have been X-Men fans for a long time, and we have a couple of folks who are a little bit newer fans, and they were like, "This is X-Men comics." I was like, "No. It was really good at one point. It's gonna get good again." And of course, with the Krakoa era, even though the Krakoa era is ending soon, it's been a lot of fun. It's been really good, and it's been incredibly queer.
Those eras have a few fun moments. And they're classic X-Men stories, but it's just not the types of stories we want. I don't really ever want to see Old Man Logan on a team ever again, and that's fine with me. And it's
Yeah.
going to happen. That's fine.
Also, Rachel should be Phoenix or Ascani or just Rachel. Prestige is a terrible code name. Awful.
Yeah, it's like that weird was it Christian Bale magician movie was The Prestige? Was it
Good
Christian Bale?
movie.
I don't know. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. You guys are delightful in person. I particularly vibe with you. I think you and I, out of your group, you and I have done the most kind of chatting and hanging out, and I think you're fantastic and you guys have such a fun show. I wish we hung out more often. I should we need to make that happen. I would love
Yeah.
to vibe more frequently.
Same here.
We'll have to, I don't know. I'm gonna have you on for a trial or something and like make you do the homework first. It's we have some pretty scholarly, like intellectual nerdy stuff on my show sometimes. It's a good
I
time.
love that. Yeah. And I love the class that you taught at Uncanny Experience, like that kind of like the history of the Silver Age
That was
X-Men.
fun to do. I'm really hoping I put in a pitch for a couple of panels and classes this coming year. I haven't heard back yet, but I'm really hoping to see some stuff happen for me and for you guys. It was really fun being featured in your game show last year too. That was a delightful time.
Yeah, thanks for being a good sport.
Oh, I had so much fun. I was just happy to sit down. I had been standing for so
A
long.
lot of walking, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to being back this year. So on this channel, we do focused episodes on obscure or less frequently used supporting characters and villains. My kind of standard rule is it's either like a family member or like a human ally or like a mutant character that wouldn't qualify for a trial, which is, usually less than 30 appearances, with rare exceptions. If I have someone like very special for a particular episode, we'll vibe. Today we're gonna going to talk about a character that is historic for me. That's the character Rainfire. And I have shared this on my show before. When I was 14, things were not good at home. I had an abusive stepfather and things were kind of ugly. We were living in a rural town in Idaho, in like potato country. My high school mascot was a potato. Like, I'm not joking. There was a local grocery store that had a comic spinner rack, and I needed a world to get lost in. And the first X-Men comic book I ever picked up was X-Force number 27,
wow.
By Fabian Nicieza, which features the debut of Rainfire and the Mutant Liberation Front. The epic story where Feral turns bad and Sunspot goes missing and Tempo turns good? And everything felt so consequential. I don't know that I've ever really given Rainfire much of a thought afterward, because he's a relatively forgettable character in the X-Men franchise, but he does have some special connections to a few characters that make him kind of interesting. But this was my first big supervillain. This was the big imposing ebon black in like gold robes supervillain floating down from the sky, Exodus style, but Exodus does it so much better. I'm really happy we get to tackle this particular character together. Let me hear your introduction to the character Rainfire. R-E-I-G-N, Rainfire, everyone.
So I'm going to take a little step back and say that I started reading X-Men a little bit before you did. Thank you for sharing your origin story and being vulnerable. For me, I really got into the X-Men. I've had issues here and there, but I really started collecting them around Inferno. So my character was Madeline Pryor. So like my first issue...
Oh, let me be clear. Rainfire was never my character. He was just my first. Go ahead.
Well, you never forget your first. That's what we always tell ourselves, right? And so Madeline was my first as like a big villain outside of like, you know, seeing Magneto in the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends cartoon and like the more traditional ex-villains that you saw. But Madeline Pryor, you know, wearing not very much and looking, you know, even as a gay man saying, wow, she looks pretty damn good.
A little underboob never hurt.
Underboob never hurts. And then you see Alex Summers in his Goblin Prince outfit, you know, game over. I am fully gay. It is important for first. So Rainfire, my experience with him was mostly seeing him on the cover of X-Force, like when I would go to the comic store. Post Claremont, I was very sporadic with the X-Men. I would kind of go into like the big crossover. So like Executioner Song, Fatal Attractions, which is kind of right around this time, and you know, Age of Apocalypse. And then I kind of just like fell off a little bit until Morrison started their run in the early 2000s. And of course, now I've gone back and like read pretty much everything thanks to Marvel Unlimited. So Rainfire was always like, oh, this is an interesting visual. And I'm like, oh, he's clearly like an evil version of Sunspot. Like I picked up on that because I knew who Sunspot was. He's got a very, very 90s design. I mean, it is busy is maybe a good way to put it. It is like capes and headdresses and he's got the long curly hair. And that was like of the style in the early 90s. But it reminded me, and you said this, it reminded me a little bit of Exodus. The 90s is such an interesting time for the X-Men where most people remember the cartoon. The cartoon was just really telling the more Claremontian storylines with the in 90s drag. Whereas the actual comics, I swear, I think they were just trying to throw spaghetti against the wall to see what stuck. Certain things stuck. Rainfire is one of those things that didn't, as we will talk about a little bit. So my exposure to him was very cursory, surface level. After my podcast started 7 years ago, I went back and read pretty much everything. And I was like, yeah, you know, there was Rainfire. And then he was kind of there. And then he kind of wasn't. And then he kind of got retconned. Not a classic character. There's not a lot of people doing Rainfire cosplay.
We were talking before we started about how revisiting stories we read as kids, as adults, we read into things a lot differently. There's a lot of really interesting themes around Rainfire, but ultimately a relatively mediocre character who they kind of made look like was going to be a really big deal, right? Like the cover of him in that like gold and black. The interesting thing, and I've had the absolute fucking pleasure of interviewing Fabian Nicieza a couple times. When he was writing X-Force, he had a pretty big cast of characters that had a pretty dense history. Sunspot was one of those characters floating around. And we're going to jump to the end of the Rainfire conversation here in a minute. We learn, although it doesn't work at all, it's a weird story and it's a retcon later. But the story that gets told is that Rainfire is a kind of amped up genetic clone sort of Sunspot. So when you take that and you look at Sunspot, whose power is to go like ebon black as he like reflects whatever the solar energy and gets super strong, Rainfire is that, but amped up. He's like the Hulk size of Sunspot. He's the Ebon Black, but he can also fly and like rain fire from the sky in like a biblical, like end the city, I'm destroying Sodom and Gomorrah kind of way, right? Like he's targeting these like shafts of fire against people. And Sunspot learns to fly in this same storyline where he's always been able to, you know, he starts getting like solar blasts rather than just super strength, and he starts flying. So they're amping that character up in some ways, and it takes Sunspot on a pretty interesting journey after this, but that's the retcon that comes later. First, we've got the Mutant Liberation Front. I don't know, what are your thoughts on like the, you know, Hulk-sized version of Rainfire, or Sunspot, I mean?
You had, I think the two big characters from the 90s that really still work today are Exodus, as we've talked about, and Fabian Cortez, as, you know, Exodus being like the true believer in mutant supremacy. Fabian Cortez using mutant supremacy to basically get power unto himself. Like, he's not a true believer. He's like, he's a snake oil salesman, you know?
Yeah, he's the usurper. He's going to whisper in your ear and then take over. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the J.D. Vance of Donald Trump, if you want to get really political. Rainfire to me is like the mashup of the two, if you think about it. And then, you know, grafting on like kind of Sunspot's backstory, because Breaking Bad is definitely like one of the tropes that happens with the X-Men all the time, you know, whether it's, you know, Jean Grey, then it happened with Cyclops, it's happened with Wolverine, you know, like all the big characters. So this was now Sunspot's turn to do that, because I always felt, this is going to get me, you know, probably some hate mail from some of your listeners.
Oh,
I love Sunspot, but I think it's Jonathan Hickman and Al Ewing who gave him the personality I love so much. Before that, you know, when he was introduced in the New Mutants graphic novel, you know, he was definitely dealing with trauma of racism from his own culture, being Afro-Latino. And then, you know,
but also daddy issues, and also like extreme privilege, and yeah, like there's a lot going on with him. He's a great character.
He is a great character, but I never really, you know, vibed with him. Like, I was always more a big fan of like Danny Moonstar, you know, and I love Doug Ramsey, and I love Karma, and I love Warlock, you know, those are the characters, Wolfsbane, those are the characters that really like, I like remembered. Sunspot was like, oh, he's got a cool power and a cool visual, but, you know, never really cared for him as much until much, much later in his publication history. So I appreciate Nisi Aza, who I think Nisi Aza, by the way, not only a delightful guy, and I'm glad he's been on your show, I think he is quintessentially the best X-Men X-writer, I would say, in the 90s. Damning with faith rate a little bit, but he's
A lot of people defer to Claremont, and I love Claremont's stories, but Nisi Aza was my guy. He was the one that I grew up like idolizing. He and Annie Nesenti, who I've also had on my show, and they're like childhood heroes that I've kind of befriended in a podcasty way, right?
Yeah.
They're incredible people. And I'm just, as a 45-year-old man, I'm so verklempt at the opportunity to get to know them. Nisi Aza has a way of, with all these millions of mutant characters that were like being launched for toy lines back in the 90s, of just giving a couple of words or a little bit of context in a speech bubble to make you suddenly care or be curious about Fantasia or Forearm or these like characters that never really get explored, but there's just enough there because of those bubbles, you know? And with Rainfire's picking up the legacy of a group called the Mutant Liberation Front, which we'll talk much more about another time. The very simple premise here is at the end of the first volume of New Mutants, like the very end, Rob Liefeld is the new like MTV, you know, superstar, quirky artist with the big guns and the huge chests and the tiny waists and the, you know, missing feet.
Yeah, I was going to say feet. Yes, thank you.
And we get Cable and we get Strife, and it takes a while to learn it, but Strife is Cable's clone. They're both from the future. Cable comes back and forms a paramilitary unit based off of Xavier's students, and Strife forms the Mutant Liberation Front, who are, you know, X-Force is in your face. They're willing to kill. They're willing to have a high body count. They're willing to throw themselves into deadly situations. Strife's team is like that, but it's more for profit. They're more considered like terrorists, where they're doing harmful things, but you still kind of get it. You still kind of vibe, because mutants have been harmed by humans so much. There's a lot of racially problematic stereotype characters in this group, like Sumo and Kamikaze and Dragoness. We're not going to take time on those characters today, but that group has kind of been decimated and like thrown apart. And in this era, when Rainfire comes aboard, he begins a new version of the Mutant Liberation Front. And I think there's been like three more versions, most recently in Uncanny Avengers, you know, led by the evil Steve Rogers, Captain Krakoa.
Right, Captain Krakoa, yeah.
But this time he takes just a couple members. There's Forearm, who I am weirdly affectionate over Tempo, who we fucking love from Marauders.
Fantastic.
And recent stuff. And then we've got Reaper and Wildside. Reaper is, well, Forearm's a guy with forearms that's super strong. Tempo is a woman of color who can slow down time, oversimplifying. Reaper is a guy from Peru, I believe, who has like a scythe that he is bonded with somehow. And when he slashes you, he can cause like neurological damage. And Wildside's like a little Wolverine light guy who's like from a rich, fancy home, and he can make you like see shit that's not there by messing with your mind. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but these are a fun little group of characters. It's a manageable team. I like all four of them in a weird way. I'm fond of them. They all deserve their own episodes.
If X-Force is like the next step from X-Men, at least the 90s version, then the Mutant Liberation Front is the next step from the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Evil, you know, in quotes.
Well, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, who took the government contract as Freedom Force and worked on that until it got blown apart. And now these guys are coming back on a new level, right?
Well, yeah, that's where I was going with it. So like the original MLF led by Strife, that you could almost say like, okay, Strife was, Magneto was kind of his through line or his touchstone. Whereas for Rainfire, Mystique is his, you know, his touchstone, because Mystique is the one who reformed the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. That's the team that's in Days of Future Past. That's the team that becomes Freedom Force. By the way, my very first issue of X-Men is actually Uncanny 199, the introduction of Freedom Force. Mm-hmm. But I didn't collect regularly after that. Wasn't until Inferno I did. I like this team a lot too. And I like that there is, I think one of my favorite tropes of the X-Men is this sort of moral ambiguity, this grayness that you implied of like, they're bad guys, but you know, you kind of get why they're bad guys. And you see Feral switch, because Feral was always, I think, an unreliable ally for X-Force. And she hates Henry Gyrick, because who doesn't? Henry Gyrick is a piece of shit, right?
I vowed on my show before, we will do the trial of Henry Peter Gyrick one day. It will happen.
Oh my God, that guy just needs to, you know, Agent Brand is a problematic character, but when she killed him in Sword, like, hallelujah, fantastic. I digress. But, you know, and then Tempo, who I would say somewhere between neutral and good, realizes, hey, maybe this isn't really for me. They're, you know, I agree with, you know, Mutant Liberation, but their tactics are too extreme. And she kind of, you know, decides, she doesn't break good necessarily, but she just sort of walks away, which I really respect. So I think they're great. And what I like about it, them versus X-Force, and this is going back to Nicieza, is the man can write a team book really well. And that is not an easy skill. And there's a lot of very good writers out there who just don't have that skill set. They're very good at solo titles, or when they take on a team book, they decide, I just want to focus on this character or these two characters, and everybody else is just sort of, you know, window dressing, their background. But Nicieza gives everybody a little bit of a time to shine and makes you really care about both teams.
So Rainfire's goal as he recruits the Mutant Liberation Front is to kidnap Henry Peter Gyrick as a show. It'd be basically like paramilitary group of gays capturing Mitch McConnell and like holding him hostage on national news to get a reaction out of people. And then the good gays have to go in and like beat up the bad gays to save the awful Republican, but then they punch him in the face at the end. You know, that's kind of the story that's being told here. Yeah. Rainfire does come on very strong. His power is, again, he's got super strength. He's like shooting fire all over the place. And he's just huge. He takes up a lot of room on the page. His speech bubbles are on fire, literally. We're going to read I'm not going to do like a bunch of dialogue reading, but just reading a little bit. He breaks into a prison, knocks out all the guards, or kills them more likely. And then the members of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants in their costumes are just kind of strung up on a wall together. And he says, Michael McKay, known as Forearm, your enormity of strength is matched only by your propensity for hooking up with the wrong people. Heather Tucker, Tempo, your ability to warp time to suit your needs has not helped you from doing time, has it? Pantuhuragib, the Reaper, whose neural paralyzing scythe has most certainly reaped what you have sown. And finally, Richard Gill, Wildside, whose inclination toward acts of savage lunacy are so very contradictory to your oh-so-proper upbringing. And Wildside goes, well, you freed us and you got a psychoanalyze neater than a rap on Sally Jesse Raphael, so when are you gonna tell us who the fuck you are? And he yells, like, all in caps, I am the storm on the horizon. I am the sweltering tempest waiting to erupt. I am Rainfire, and you four are going to become a part of my new Mutant Liberation Front. And Wildside goes, that that old gig again? That party was a bust the first time around. My goals are very different than those of your former leader, Strife. We will work with each other towards mutually desirable goals, and you will be my soldiers, my front line against the human pigs who have oppressed our people for so long. And Forearm says, and we get, and he goes, you get to become powerful and wealthy beyond your dreams. To prove this new MLF means business, what say we start small? What say we kidnap and kill the director of this government's Project Wide Awake, the mutant eliminating program currently in development? What say we find Henry Peter Gyrick and flay him alive? And you kind of get it. Because Project Wide Awake is the government program that's like hunting down mutants, employing mutants for pro-human causes, funding government initiatives against mutants. Like, again, you kind of get it. Henry Peter Gyrick is the worst character, right? He's scum.
They're the proto-Orcus. I mean, that's, you know, they're the ones who set up the Sentinels. You know, what Sentinels led to Nimrod. And so they're exactly, you know, they're bad dudes. And so
Project Armageddon first, that's the Stephen Lang Sentinel program. And then Project Wide Awake.
That's right.
Right afterward, right? And they're bad news.
I mean, who doesn't love, you know, like a flamboyant queen coming in and saying, you know, we're going to fucking rob Fort Knox. You know, we're going to kill Hitler. We're going to, you know, love an ambitious plan. So good on Rainfire for just, you know, kicking the doors down and saying, we're, you know, let's go girl, Shania Twain style. Again, a lot of fun. And Henry Gyrick, as we've discussed, is a very easy person to hate. He's got a very punchable face and a very punchable personality. What I love, though, is Rainfire, clearly, like, you know, Nicieza wanted him to be an older Bobby DaCosta, where he, like, leans into, I'll make you rich and famous. Because that's Bobby DaCosta's, like, currency, literally money, because he's, you know, he's a child of privilege, like, from Brazil. He literally wants to use that currency with these folks, whereas, like, someone like Strife wouldn't use that. Magneto certainly wouldn't use that. Even Fabian Cortez.
Strife's method is like, do as I fucking say. And he's like, I'll make you rich. It's a very different vibe.
It is. It's a little like Spider-Man villain, if you think about it, you know? It's like, hey, let's form the Sinister Six, but we're going to beat up on human bigots who hate mutants.
And you kind of get it? You do. You kind of get it. The next issue, and I'm picturing 14-year-old me picking up this book, and the title of this book is Liberation Through Subjugation. And I for sure did not understand what that phrase meant when I was a kid. And we open on the Mutant Liberation Front on the grounds of the home of Henry Peter Gyrick. Wildside is way too rough. He's killing people. Tempo's like super worried about it. They fight Henry Peter Gyrick's guard, who is a guy named Hardaway, which is a terrible villain name. That's like when your Viagra doesn't wear off. This is the only appearance of this queen. It is an old man in a like metal suit. He looks like the Crypt Keeper or like Silvermane from the Spider-Man books.
Yeah.
Tell us about Hardaway. Who's this guy? He's a weird one.
So when I first read Hardaway, I thought it was Hadaway who sang, what is love, baby, don't hurt me. And that would have been better. Hardaway left no impression. He's quintessential 90s throwaway background character to me.
Yeah, he calls himself a biosentry. It's like the government's experimenting with a different type of sentinel, basically.
Yeah.
And he's going to kill them all. They kill him, of course. We also get two more members of the MLF in this. One of them is the character Locus, who is a teleporting woman dressed in orange who mysteriously changes races throughout her appearances. She's got a super long ponytail. We'll do a Patreon on her sometime. And the other member, Kellen, is who?
It is
Moonstar.
Oh my God. It's Moonstar. It's Danny Moonstar, who we discover later on is doing an undercover mission to like infiltrate MLF. Love that for her.
Yeah. So Danielle Moonstar is a new mutant who we love. Her code name is Mirage or Psyche. This is her last name, Danielle Moonstar. And this is her worst costume. Do you want to talk about her
awful
costume?
Literally awful. I mean, I don't like shitting on creators, but Matt Broom has become a better artist, but in the 90s, that sort of like quasi Layfield-esque look was not good. And some of the costume designs were quite bad.
It's a red mask over her face and like a red bathing suit with boots. And she's riding her winged horse because she's a Valkyrie. And now she has like a psychic bow and arrow, and she's like the last member of this team. So again, Nicieza is bringing a character back that the New Mutants fans were clamoring to see, but maybe not like this. Because she's with the MLF for a while. Man, that's how I knew this character. I didn't know her history. I just knew she was like their old friend who had turned bad or something.
I really loved this character turn for her, that like, you know, she was such a essential part of the New Mutants. And, you know, I just don't think Layfield like had a thing like, he just didn't particularly love that character for some reason. He was like, oh, well, maybe I've got my, you know, quota of Native American characters with Warpath, so I don't need Danielle Moonstar. And so she was not part of X-Force for a long time because she had this role. But what an interesting idea of, you know, and we see this with Firestar right now in the current books. She's infiltrating Orcus, like somebody who's done this, you know, like gone deep, deep Donnie Brasco undercover to be able to root out, you know, some bad mutants.
Moonstar and Karma from the original New Mutants are the hardest characters to write because their powers are tricky to use in a team book. You have to be very creative to make the girl who can make your dreams or fears come true and the girl who can possess your mind tricky, because they're not your typical telepath, but they're both great. You just have to be creative in how you use them. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Character.
Okay, so they capture Gyrick. We shift to a meeting between, and I love this conglomeration, Nick Fury, Charles Xavier, Valerie Cooper, and Forge. And we just don't have time to get into it, but this whole like smattering of like people who make, you know, Fox News segments for and against mutants, like it's an interesting group. And they're like, we can't rescue Gyrick. There's basically nothing we can do. But Cable's on the job and he'll gather his team of X-Force, who is Sunspot, Feral, Siren, Cannonball, Boomer, in her worst name, Boomer. Okay, Boomer. Warpath, Shatterstar, and Richter. And they are going to go after Rainfire, who has moved the Mutant Liberation Front to Magneto's old island in the Bermuda Triangle, which was a big thing through the Claremont run. There's this mysterious old island, and now they are living there. So lots of X-Men continuity being worked in here. I'm kind of skipping over some stuff quickly. Do you have any comments on that era or area?
I love the little like proto Illuminati with like Forge and Val Cooper and Nick Fury and Professor X. And like, I kind of like that, like, you know, they're all the various X teams had their own identity. Like, you know, the X-Men, they were the flagship heroes. X-Factor, they took over Freedom Force's role at this time. They were the government sanctioned characters. And then X-Force, they were just these wild cards. You know, they would like, they kind of, you know, would be oppositional to the X-Men and then work with the X-Men. And so I really like it's a very Dirty Dozen, Suicide Squad kind of a, like a role that they're playing. It's like, well, someone's got to do this job and it better be us, you know, like that's my Cable voice right now. So I really, really kind of dug that part of it. But I agree with you. I love Boom Boom. I have a first appearance from Secret Wars 2. Not a great crossover, but I remember it because I remember that character so vividly. Boomer is literally the dumbest name she had. Like Time Bomb, great. Boom Boom, fantastic.
Meltdown,
not even very 90s, but I don't mind it. Boomer, like you think, yeah, I'm glad she never joined Generation X. You know, that would have been like really, really problematic. But a lot of these costumes, I think, you know, you had the Layfield design ones, which are not great. And then Greg Capullo was the main artist on X-Force. And I think he was either leaving the book or like taking a break for these issues. So, you know, didn't love the Matt Broom art at the time and still don't. But, you know, Greg Capullo's design of these characters, I think it was 90s, but it was pretty good. I really kind of dug it.
Yeah, I have a significant affection for every one of these characters from X-Force. Again, these were my childhood characters growing up, more than the X-Men were, more than Cyclops and Rogue. I mean, I love all them too, but these are my characters. These are the ones I imprinted on Cable and Cannonball, like top two right at the top of the list. I love them all. So they capture Gyrick, they take him back to the island, they string him up. And again, he had just pulled the mutants out of the jail where they had been strung up. And Wildside beats the shit out of Gyrick. And the idea of, it's kind of satisfying. The idea of like the guy that's behind the program that's killing and capturing mutants being beat to it, you know, or beat to a pulp, you kind of get it. Rainfire has a long interchange with Gyrick, who is not, he is not a man to ever back down from any words. He's trying to lecture even as he's like strung up in this cell. The one line of dialogue I'll read from Rainfire here. I did want to comment. Moonstar explains to Tempo a while back, like, again, she's undercover, we learned later, but she explains to Tempo, the reason I'm on this team is I fell from Asgard. And she says, Rainfire showed me that an angel of death for humans can also be an angel of life for mutants, which you kind of get. That's Wolverine, not using these types of tactics. So Rainfire is lecturing Gyrick, and at one point he says, I will use a public official guilty of crimes against my kind to foment anger and dissatisfaction within the human race. I will use that disaffection and isolationism to create an army dedicated to my cause. That army will rally in unison to stake a claim to one place, one counter we can call our own. And only after we have achieved that, after we are safe within the boundaries of the very laws you have created, only then will we seek to overthrow your oppressive rule on the rest of the world. So he's looking for, like, mutant homeland. He's looking to establish a base of power for mutant kind. The trick is that he wants to be the one in charge. So it's interesting because the what he's standing for is interesting, but his motivations are a little bit corrupt. Do you have any thoughts on this? Nicieza does a great job of re-examining the X-Men ideal through a lot of different lenses.
I think if he waited long enough, he could have had Genosha and then Krakoa, you know? And so, you know, again, it is one of those things where, going back to what I was saying, it's like, it's an interesting experiment that didn't really work. Like, Rainfire just feels like, you know, lesser than the sum of his parts, if that makes sense. Like, he's definitely like got a little bit of Magneto, a little bit of Strife, a little bit of, you know, Exodus, a little bit of Fabian Cortez, a little bit of, like, you know, Apocalypse even. Sometimes you're not going to get gold or blue for that matter. So we're talking about the X-Men.
Or red or green.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a big fight with X-Force and the Mutant Liberation Front. Rainfire is initially extremely powerful and is basically kind of defeating them all on his own. He eventually convinces Feral to turn to his side. Moonstar's also on his side. And then Tempo switches sides to go back to the other side. And he ends up getting defeated in the end, obviously. But Feral's turn, you know, when I was a teenage reader, looking at the hero willing to commit the murder because they want Gyrick to die. Gyrick is saved, and at the end, Cable punches him in the face. You know, it's kind of fun. There is a moment where Sunspot's like, whoa, that guy is a lot like me. What's happening here, right? Like, there's some energy there, but we don't quite know what's going on.
Again, Rainfire didn't leave much of an impression. I got more interested a little bit later on with the retcons, how they try to make it work. And they kind of made more of a mess of it, which we'll get into in a second. I think there are some, like, really great high points of Nicieza's X-Force run, especially in the first, I would say, 30, 35 issues. This was probably not my favorite part of it.
Yeah, no, I get it. But in this era, you have to really buy into the idea that Xavier's dream is the ideal. You still have to see Professor X and his team as the heroes. And his dream is to peacefully coexist with humans. Even when humans hunt us, even when humans kill us, we still have to coexist. We have to be the better people. And when you have Magneto not wanting that, Exodus not wanting that, Rainfire not wanting that, you see a lot of villains who look past it and you kind of empathize with them because you get it. You get why they're sick of the shit. This is the AIDS era. You know, why should we peacefully coexist when we are dying? But it's interesting because the Xavier, ultimately, we kind of think of as the ultimate villain in the X-Men because his dream is so ineffective in the long run. But you have to buy into the idea that the X-Men's ideals are what make them heroes, which is why Cable strides the line with X-Force of, like, we're going to take the dream and turn it on its head. But Cable's the good guy, X-Force the good guys, Mutant Liberation Front are the bad guys. You have to buy into that, or the story doesn't work. It's interesting.
It's very much the respectability politics of, like, neoliberalism, I think, from the 80s and 90s, especially, like, that you can kind of see the triangulation of, like, Bill Clinton in the early 90s there, somebody who works in politics and is a student of politics. It's of the time, to your point, and it made a lot of sense then. In retrospect, it just seems so quaint at best and just, like, problematic at worst.
We're going to jump to X-Force Annual 3 next. And there is a speech that Moonstar recounts, like, when Rainfire recruited her, the speech he gave her is, mutants need to be made free, liberated from what is expected of us so that we can do what is necessary, liberated from oppression now so that we may never become the oppressor tomorrow, liberated from the shackles of the dream, referring to Xavier's dream, so that our lives do not become a nightmare. That's the part of this character that I can vibe with. I get it, and I love Nicieza for doing that with this character. However, we learn in this issue that Rainfire is not the greatest guy, and he is willing to exploit and harm mutants in order to get what he wants. Do you want to tell us the kind of 1-2 plot line of X-Force Annual Number 3? It's an interesting ride.
It is, and it's very much focused on Dani Moonstar, which is why I really liked this issue very much. Like, she's the POV character, and you get a little bit more of her backstory. The thing that really stuck with me is Mike Wieringo did this this art. He, you know, later became, you know, RIP, you know, he passed away a number of years ago, but in the 90s, he started getting really big on doing a lot of DC work and then his own creator-owned work. He didn't do a whole lot of Marvel, but he is so, I remember reading it at a time, I remember rereading it recently. This is very much different from the Marvel house style, especially the X-Men house style, which was Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri and Rob Liefeld, and then their, you know, their clones, or the folks that, you know, tried to draw like them and then eventually grew up their own styles. But this issue, I think annuals get a bad rap sometimes, but I think they can be really, really good stories. And this one, like, just kind of, when you learn a little bit more about Rainfire's, you know, motivation and you get Danny's perspective, I think this is a very, very enjoyable issue.
There's a group called Three Piece who are mutants living in China where, I mean, I'm oversimplifying the story, but it's kind of illegal to be a mutant. And the government has captured them. And Rainfire takes the Mutant Liberation Front with the premise of wanting to help this team. But in the end, he betrays the team so that he can form a connection with, like, the resources available to him from the Chinese government. So oversimplifying again, but it'd be, if we're using the queer allegory, we're going to a country where it's illegal to be gay. We find the local gays who are fighting against that oppression, but then turn against those heroic people in order to benefit from the government that's oppressing the queers, right? That's an uncomfortable story. And it shows Rainfire as a true villain, because you can't resonate with that if he's willing to harm his people that he says he's trying to protect. Oversimplifying right. That story, it's a good read. I love when you see when we get a villain turn, and when they do that in an annual, because buying the books back then was expensive with my teenage budget, you know? So if I'm going to go spend all this money on an annual, I really want the stories that are going to make me think. We're not going to talk a lot more about Three Piece, but this does give us the MLF story right before things explode and get weird.
These annuals were really expensive at the time, and I remember paying what seems like a lot of money back then, $4 for a single comic, which is what they cost now, being disappointed with what I read. And I was like, I spent $4 on this. I could have gone and played, you know, Street Fighter 2 for 2 hours with all the quarters that would have made $4. So
we're going to fast forward a little bit. Over in the main X-Men titles, Legion is now going back in time and he's trying to kill Magneto, but he kills Xavier instead and launches the Age of Apocalypse. Everything across the X-Men line, everybody turns to crystal, like the Macron crystal, in the middle of their adventures. And as far as we knew at the time, the books were then canceled and they are replaced by entirely new books in a different reality. 5 months later, we're back to normal, but a bunch of time has passed and we don't really know what's happened. And that's what's going on in this particular story. So what I did not mention, at the end of the original Rainfire story, Sunspot goes missing. He notices that Rainfire is familiar to him somehow, but then Locust's weird powers of teleportation activate and Sunspot's gone and we don't know where he is. It's like a whole 2 years have passed now. So we jump to X-Force 43, which is the book right before the Age of Apocalypse. So this is at the end of this is when everyone turns to Chris. Mm-hmm. And Rainfire has gone mad. They're now living on the island of the Animator, who is a weird fucking little villain who killed Doug Ramsey one time. We'll talk about him on another episode sometime. I don't know. Are you an Animator fan?
Can't say that I am. Not really.
I mean, no one likes this guy. He's turned against the Mutant Liberation Front. Cannonball's there, and he's like, what the fuck is going on? And Rainfire says, the answer to where Bobby DaCosta has been since he disappeared months ago should have been quite clear to you had you been capable of accepting the obvious. And he pulls his mask off in a reveal and says, God was not involved in what I've been forced to do or the reasons why I have undertaken the miserable task of setting this planet right. And it's fucking Sunspot. And Cannonball's like, what the hell? Sunspot was with us when we fought you. And he's like, ah, but time has a way of pulling the rug out from under the feet of anyone wearing an X on their belt. Doesn't it? It's me, Rainfire. It is and has always been Roberto DaCosta. And then the world turns to crystal and you're like, what the fuck just happened? What are we led to believe in X-Force number 43?
I had to remind myself this was basically the start of Age of Apocalypse. Because so Age of Apocalypse was, I remember reading about it in Wizard Magazine, again, dating myself here, pre-internet, at least pre-internet for me, and being like, oh my God, Age of Apocalypse sounds amazing. So I went and bought Legion Quest, both X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, reading that storyline of Legion going in the past, try to kill Magneto, ends up killing his dad instead.
I didn't know the history. I didn't know the history of any of these characters. I didn't know who Legion was, but it was a really fun time to be a fan. I fucking loved Age of Apocalypse. So
Age
good.
Of Apocalypse. Okay, Age of Apocalypse. All right, you're bringing back some memories now. That was the first time I finally was able to, like, I had a driver's license. I was over 16. I was able to, like, drive myself to the comic store. So I would go. I became a Wednesday warrior for the first time ever, and would go to the comic store and, like, pick up and literally go just to pick up every single Age of Apocalypse storyline. It was
I would make my mom, like, drive me after school on Wednesday to get there fast because they were going to sell out of whatever issue, and there was no way to read it then.
There was no way to read it. Like, you know, they eventually did collect them, but there was no guarantee that was going to happen. There was no Marvel Unlimited. There's no Comixology, you know, no Kindles. And so if the book wasn't there, it wasn't there. That actually happened to me with Executioner Song. I remember.
Me too. Because they started doing my pull box at the comic shop the next year.
Nice.
I missed out on. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I actually had a guy at a comic store tell me, well, you know, you're not going to catch up, so you may as well just not. And I'm like, who says that to anybody now? It's like, you know, like, there's so many ways of, like, being able to catch up on a series that has been running for so long, even a, like, you know, a major storyline. And so, but somebody at a local comic store is just saying, yeah, you missed, you know, chapters 2 and 3. So just don't worry about it anymore. But I like, to your point, I could not miss Age of Apocalypse.
It was amazing. But we're led to believe, as the world crystallizes, that Rainfire was Sunspot the whole time. And he's either a dark version, like Sunspot turned bad, or he's Sunspot from the future who's come back in time. And you're like, what the hell? And then when the world comes back, some time has passed and Sunspot is now part of the X-Force team again. And they play this mystery out over, like, the next year and a half. You're led to believe over, like, several issues that Rainfire is, like, an evil mind entity that's, like, existing in Sunspot's body, but Cable is, like, helping Sunspot keep the Rainfire part of him under control. Like, we are led to believe Rainfire possessed Sunspot, but in that original story, they were in the same place at the same time, so it just doesn't fucking work. And it's a very odd thing, and we don't learn the answer for years until X-Force 72. And I'm skipping over a bunch of shit, but do you have comments on this kind of era of books?
Well, I have a kind of a question because it just popped in my head, because this was so right after Age of Apocalypse ended, when, you know, everybody came back to the normal 616, you know, it was leading up to Onslaught. And Onslaught was basically, like, at the end of Fatal Attractions, Professor X does the unthinkable. He lobotomizes Magneto because Magneto, you know, was doing some really heinous shit at the time. Part of Magneto's mind, you know, becomes part of Charles Xavier, and it leads to Onslaught, which then leads to Heroes Reborn, blah, blah, blah. But I'm wondering, you know, Nicieza was definitely an architect of Onslaught, and I'm wondering if he was experimenting or saying, you know, maybe, like, maybe not experimenting is the right word, but, like, maybe he was, like, riffing off his own idea with Rainfire and Sunspot, of, like, Rainfire being this sort of, like, malevolent, you know, entity within, you know, a hero's brain.
I remember thinking it must have been a time traveling Sunspot, but then I kind of got the idea that it, you know, like how Malice possesses Polaris and makes, like, a version of her, that after the AOA, that's kind of what I thought Rainfire was. And it's a long time before we get answers. It's literally years. It's just kind of one of those, like, big long list of mysteries in the comics. I don't know exactly what the intent was. I'd have to ask Nicieza directly. When we get to X-Force 72, which is a few more years out, this is a pretty historic and favorite run for a lot of people. It's John Francis Moore and Adam Pollina, and it's like the X-Force characters, like, hitchhiking across the United States and just having random series of adventures. And he gives them a lot of new foes to face during this time, but he also picks up a lot of the old themes from the books and, like, really explores old mysteries, like what happened to Warpath's people and who the fuck is Rainfire. And Rainfire in this era, keeping it very focused on him, is basically following the team from town to town, killing people that they have interacted with and waiting for Sunspot to notice. And Locus is with him for part of this. And there's just kind of this, he wants to go after Sunspot and, like, take everything that he had. So it's a very different character now. It's a very different character with a very different motivation. He looks different. And it's just like evil Sunspot murdering anyone Sunspot's ever met. He's like the Sabretooth to Wolverine, right? Like Rainfire to Sunspot in this era. And it takes until X-Force 78 to, like, have that plot line kind of finally heat up. Any comments? There.
So this run, when John Francis Moore took over,
and Adam Pollina, I fucking love Adam Pollina, man. I love him.
Gorgeous art. And like his art today looks amazing, but back in the 90s, it was such a breath of fresh air, considering, like, you know, the 90s has this sort of reputation of, like, extreme art. Adam Pollina got started when Jeff Loeb took over the title, when, you know, they brought the X-Force
X-Force folks like back much more in line with the X-Men, and Cannonball graduated to be an X-Man. But this era of like the, you know, it's a little bit like Green Arrow and Green Lantern, like the hard traveling heroes from the 70s. If you, you know, I know you're a fan of Silver Age. I'm not sure if you ever read those issues, but like,
I wasn't a fan of the Silver Age, but after my show, I love it. I also never want to read it again.
Fair enough. But, you know, they're not, what I love about it is like, they're just a group of friends and they're like, they're on a big road trip. And it was so neat and interesting. And, you know, we'll get to issue 75, but they basically go to Burning Man. And like, you know, Burning Man was getting really starting to get big in the 90s.
Karma comes out as gay.
Yes. Oh my God. Karma, like so, I mean, so queer. And John Francis Moore like doing that. Fantastic. Finally, like, you know, we knew all along that Karma was queer and, you know, basically putting out on the page is great. But I was getting more of like a serial killer vibe from Rainfire at this time. A little bit like Sabretooth to your point, but also I think like serial killer movies were really big at this time. Obviously in the early 90s, Silence of the Lambs, mid 90s, you had Seven, and then you had movies like Copycat and you know, Along Came a Spider and all those kinds of movies that dealt with like these like very malevolent, almost otherworldly, you know, forces within a pretty mundane universe. And so that's the vibe I kind of got. And I kind of liked Rainfire a lot more in this context and in this, you know, sort of, you know, motivation versus like, you know, I'm a mutant supremacist, but I'm also doing it for money. You know, that just feels a little lazy, but this is cool.
During the section we just talked about, I almost wondered, I remember reading at the time thinking like Sunspot was himself when he was awake, but he'd go to sleep and then his dark side would take over and then he'd go murder people. That's not what was happening, but that's what I remember thinking was happening. Yeah. I'm going to cover this, the Rainfire story quickly, and then let's talk about it because this is an odd story. It works and it fills in the blanks, but it's a weird story. So in X-Force 78, Rainfire has hunted down all of the members of, and Sunspot's family is like billionaires. He has like the DaCosta company. We'll talk about Emmanuel DaCosta, his father, another time. He's an interesting character who was like part of the Hellfire Club for a minute. But
right.
But Rainfire's trying to take over DaCosta's assets. He basically wants everything that Sunfire's. Have you seen Saltburn?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Rainfire is like sucking up the bath water after Sunspot gets out of the bath and like fucking his grave afterward, right? Like he's that here.
Okay, now I'm imagining Rainfire dancing naked to Murder on the Dance Floor. And I'm living. Yeah.
God, I hated that movie so much.
It's not good. It's not good, but it's got a good soundtrack.
So basically what happens, he states on the page very clearly he's not Sunspot. He goes after Moonstar and captures her, calls her a Jezebel for betraying him. He captures Siren and Warpath. He kills a kid that Sunspot was playing soccer with, drains his powers, captures him. He captures Meltdown or Tabitha and Skids. And then he goes back to his base in Las Vegas, which is an abandoned casino named Babylon, where he has a mutant who has like cognitive delays. He's like a developmentally disabled mutant named Henry Wallinger, and his power is like leech. He can cancel out the powers of other mutants. So it's issue 79 where we finally get answers. First, Rainfire says, you know, Bobby and I have a telepathic bond. Then he explains that when Sunspot had disappeared way back after X-Force 2728, Rainfire had captured him and been experimenting on him. Locus is loyal to Rainfire. When Cable severed their telepathic link, Rainfire wandered the streets with no memories for a long time. Then we get a cutaway scene to a weird guy named Dr. Segismund Joshua, who's an employee of Gideon. Okay, you got to keep it to one sentence. Who's Gideon?
Gideon is an external.
Green ponytail external, who is a big X-Force New Mutants villain.
I will just add, he is the action figure you could always find at the toy store.
No one wanted it.
Nobody wanted Gideon. Yeah.
He deserves an episode too. So Dr. Joshua is trying to isolate the mutant gene, and he gives Sunspot's gene to another mutant who's like deteriorating in a nutrient bath. They call him Project 19, and Sunspot's DNA has been given to this weird mutant to stabilize with, and it's now allowed him to like absorb this power and expand. So we don't know quite what Rainfire's real deal is, but you know, if you gave him another mutant's power, he's going to bond and connect with that mutant in a different way, right? So we go back to the present. Warpath is knocked out Short Circuit, the poor little, like, developmentally disabled guy. Everyone gets their powers back. Locus and Skids disappear. That's a story for another time. The mutants escape. Rainfire wants to burn down, like, Vegas. But Dr. Joshua shows up with a cannon that shoots Rainfire and disrupts his powers. And then he takes over Sunspot's mind again. So issue number 80, Rainfire's fighting X-Force in Sunspot's body now. So he does have the ability to like bond with Sunspot. And we finally get the explanation from Dr. Joshua, who says, "I am a geneticist. I've devoted my life to the study of mutation and higher life forms. Rainfire was Project 19, a mutant life form I had been studying since the horrific circumstances of its birth. Although its protoplasmic body lacked any human characteristics, our psi talent determined 19 possessed a rudimentary consciousness. When the external Gideon contacted me to run a series of experiments on your teammate Sunspot, I found the means to increase his ability to absorb and process heat and light. At the same time, I introduced a sample of Sunspot's or DaCosta's cell tissue into 19 to see if 19 would replicate Bobby's photovoltaic ability. The result was far more than amazing than I anticipated. 19 transformed into a mirror image of Roberto DaCosta, as if Bobby were the template for his existence. Soon after, 19 escaped after setting fire to my laboratory and killing 5 people. A few months later, he reappeared as Rainfire with the Mutant Liberation Front." Okay, so what happened to this guy? He's a little gooey mutant baby who didn't have a body, basically. What happened?
It's a little John Carpenter's The Thing, don't you think? It's a little like creepy sci-fi horror with a little bit of like, you know, H.P. Lovecraft kind of stuff thrown in the background. It's a weird retcon, but I also don't hate it.
It works. It's a story that works, even though I don't necessarily love it. It did answer all the questions that we had, because sure, God, this fucking mystery had been playing out for so long, I kind of no longer cared. I remember when the internet first launched, going to like a message board, there was like a thread of unresolved X-Men plot threads. And this is one of the ones that annoyed me the most. Like, who is Hazard? And how did Professor Xavier's dad die? And who the fuck is Rainfire? Like, what does that mean? This is the one, you know, I'm glad we finally got an answer.
I will say, these issues, Rainfire stuff aside, which is not bad, but the soap opera-ness, like, John Francis Moore does a nice job of it, especially with, like, you kind of had, you know, Sam Guthrie and Tabitha as kind of long distance boyfriend, girlfriend. And then she and Bobby end up having, you know, a fling and a flirtation. And like, you know, Sam, it's like the bizarre love triangle of like the X-Force characters, which, you know, you've done that so many times with X characters before, like Jean Scott Wolverine, they're basically a throuple, you know, but, you know, and then Emma Scott Jean, they're maybe a throuple, you know? So a little of this stuff was like, oh, this was actually kind of cool. And then, as you mentioned, seeing Karma basically coming out and having an amazing haircut and just a cool ass, you know, outfit. I love that stuff a lot. I think that has aged very well for me.
Yeah, it's really interesting storytelling, and the soap opera is why we always stick around. We love these characters, and this is an epic soap opera, and frankly, one of the few stories that Sunspot was even getting at the time. Rainfire gets knocked out of Sunspot's body and like taken into S.H.I.E.L.D. custody. That's basically what happens. And then he's back one more time in X-Force 96-97 in a crazy story. Yeah. So Dr. Joshua is back. There's a huge plot by Celine that's going on. There's a bunch of shit going on with the Damocles Foundation, which is a weird kind of government program experimenting on mutants that's like connected to Domino and a bunch of characters. There's like a town of mutants that I think it's called Almost Reno. And then we got a bunch of evil scientists back. So Dr. Joshua is one of them, Dr. Chandra, and Dr. Indigo, Odysseus Indigo, which is actually a pretty fucking great name. And they have taken over a celestial ship. The Celestials are the giant space gods that like Apocalypse had their ship for a while and like used their technology to like make all of the mutants into the horsemen that serve him, like with power upgrades. Celestials have all kinds of crazy. They're the guys behind the Eternals and the Deviants. So these three evil scientists have Project 19 back, or Rainfire, and they want to merge a celestial golem with the remains of 19 in order to rewrite the genetic template of mutants. And Celine is there with Sunspot, and they observe Indigo. They want to stop this from happening, obviously. This is a weird Celine story. She has plans for Sunspot in the Hellfire Club. They soon fight like the sword team. Sledge is here, and Sledge is a really interesting character. A couple of the Damocles Foundation mutants, their names are Ulysses Dragonblood and Arcadia DeVille, are present. There's a demon bear appearance in all of this. Sledge and Ulysses eventually reveal to X-Force information about the Damocles Foundation, which is involved with the Eternals and the Deviants, and there's a bunch of shit going on. And it's a story. We'll have to do a Damocles episode sometime, a Damocles Foundation episode. But after they they go that learn that mutants are there, they go to free them. Sunspot's there with Celine in a weird alliance because he's trying to build up power, taking over the Hellfire Club, which is, you know, an example of a Hickman type of story because Sunspot's using his privilege to seize power. They know that Rainfire's there, so they break into the lab. Rainfire is fused with a celestial golem. They end up battling. Celine gets the other upper hand and takes control of Rainfire, and she reverts the members of the mutant members of this team called Sword into primitive creatures. And like in the end, Rainfire and the golem kind of blow up and Celine fights X-Force. I'm way oversimplifying, but there's a whole bunch of weird X-Men continuity related to storylines that had been building for a long time by John Francis Moore, related to the Damocles Foundation, the Eternals, and all these crazy characters that are floating around regarding the origins and experimentation of mutants. So I kind of like that we got Rainfire one more time. Dr. Josh was trying to use him one more time. And ultimately, Rainfire's not a villain, is where this all ends, because he is a mutant who's been experimented on by humans. He did not choose Sunspot's DNA to be grafted. He ends up obsessed with Sunspot. He's kind of a victim in his own way. He murders a bunch of people and then gets... He murders a bunch of people and then it gets taken back in by the scientists one more time and used in one more insane storyline. So that's kind of a quick summary of a very complicated story that goes on for lots of issues. Celine is fun. The Damocles Foundation is actually interesting because it's one more of those like mutant programs, like one more government initiative. And it's also interesting to see the characters interact with the Eternals on that level because they're messing with Eternal DNA too. Arcadia DeVille is kind of an interesting character. Ulysses Dragonblood's interesting. It's worth a read if you can get your hands on the books. But that's kind of the end of Rainfire. What are your thoughts on Mr. Project 19? That's his only name that we know.
It's wild that like nostalgia has brought back so many characters. You know, you mentioned Fantasia at one point. Like she was, you know, in a panel in Steve Fox's Dark X-Men, you know.
We'll see my Fantasia episode with Demanda Martini.
Demanda Martini, our good friend Demanda Martini, phenomenal drag queen, has a Fantasia drag. Like, where is the Rainfire cosplay? It doesn't exist. Like, where is, you know, no one is clamoring for Rainfire to come back. So now this is a challenge for any creators or future creators of the X-Book. Find a way to bring Rainfire back and make us care about him.
There's an interesting patch of mutants, and we won't spend a long time on this, but think of like Random. Do you know the character Random?
I love Random. Yeah.
He's like a mutant pile of goo that makes himself look like Rambo. Or Proteus, who can manipulate reality, but has to take over a physical form, which then burns out. There's like, if mutants had the opportunity to thrive because they had scientists working for them in a way that were helping them like stabilize their powers and live good lives, but instead they're often used as weapons or tools. If your power is to be this kind of protoplasmic goo that bonds with something, you gotta be bonded with something that's gonna be stable, and he deserves the opportunity in that way to be a character who has a will rather than a character who's driven mad. He hates Sunspot because of Dr. Joshua's bonding. He didn't choose this path, but then he goes like crazy evil. He's insanely intelligent as well. What you mentioned earlier is if he does take on Sunspot's motivations and he offers the Mutant Liberation Front money and he's like trying to do initiatives, these are things that we see Sunspot do in a major way later, including in Sunspot purchased AIM, the bad guy AIM group, for a while, right? Like he's a plotter. So it's almost, this character almost more than anything is showing a helpless mutant that gives us a lot of potential into what Sunspot might be capable of. But he's also an example of a long form unresolved plot that carries on for a way too long, with the resolution being not the payoff that it would have initially been. I'm just grateful we got the answer. I'm grateful we at least know his origin.
I mean, there's very few times where we get like a dangling plot thread answered, and it happened in an X-Book, so bravo to the creators that introduced it and then accomplished it. So Mr. Nicieza, Mr. Francis Moore, kudos.
Oh my god, the other story in the 90s that went on for fucking years. Do you remember how Karma's little siblings, her like brother and sister, were missing for like 9 years? Yeah. It was so annoying.
I stopped caring at one point. I was like, okay, great, they're gone. Fine. Bring them back whenever you want to. Great.
Like, just tell us they're dead if they're dead. But this whole, like, we have to find them story was awful. I often ask people, we kind of already answered, what's the Rainfire story we need?
Okay, so this is a great question, because I was thinking about like his motivation and sort of like the archetypes that he was, you know, kind of grafted onto him. So you first, that sort of like, you know, mutant supremacist, Magneto, Exodus, Apocalypse, Strife. That's his first incarnation. When we see him in the early Francis Moore stories, when they're, you know, X-Force is on the road, you've got this sort of serial killer vibe to him, you know, a little bit of that John Doe character from Seven with a little Sabretooth and Hannibal Lecter thrown in, somebody who's incredibly obsessed with the hero that he is emulating. And finally, you get Frankenstein's monster, right? And so thinking about like the major archetype of villains or misunderstood characters, anti-heroes even, I'm trying to think, you know, who like else could be like that archetype that he could be. And I'm trying to think of who is a really good like villain that I would love to see, and can't think of one right now, but maybe Chad, you can.
You know, I mean, we could attach him to a number of different characters. This character goes on a long list of mutants who deserve some exploration, but there's fucking hundreds of them, right? This character would be interesting on like Zeb Wells' Hellions as a character who's fighting for redemption, and we're exploring who he meets. I mean, we got to care about Orphan Maker on that.
That's true. It's, yeah.
When a writer puts some energy behind them, this is one of many characters that I think could be cool. He needs a new code name, though. This name, Rainfire. Do you remember they used to have this thing that they would run on the Marvel bullpen page where it was like a list of words on one side and a list of words on the other, and you just connect them, and that's how you make a name in the 90s. Bloodhawk, Rainfire, Darkhawk, Firefox. Exactly. You know, it's... And then you got names like Killspree, Killjoy, Bloodlust. Like, it just goes on.
Blood at one point, who just named put two words together. Yeah, no, I remember that also from Wizard Magazine, where they had like created a Rob Layfield character, and it was like adjective, noun. And they pretty much, that's what you came up with. It was half of like Image's like initial output in the early 90s.
There literally is a character named Killspree. That's the one that like moves to the top of that. Bloodlust and Killspree go there for me. Bloodscream, that was another one.
Bloodscream, okay, all right. Yeah.
That's the Wolverine vampire guy. Remember Bloodscream?
Yeah, I do remember Bloodscream.
I do think if we get Rainfire back, he'd need a different code name. And he would need an opportunity to explore who he is. I think he'd have some dark impulses, but he'd have to figure out what that means for him.
You know, I mentioned when I said creators were out there listening, I don't know if Steve Orlando listens to this podcast, but Steve is a friend of Homo Superior. Steve loves pulling out those 90s, like, you know, deep cuts, like in all of his big two comics, I should say, Marvel and DC.
Steve Fox too, man. Steve Fox uses like fucking Solar and Dark X-Men.
Right, I know. So like both Steves. Okay. And they're both writing Marvel Unlimited right now too. So Marvel Unlimited may be a good chance to bring back Rainfire or whatever his new code name would be. So this is a challenge if you guys are listening.
I'm friends with both Steves through the show, but my very dear friend in real life, Philip Seavey, is one of the artists on that. I'm going to pitch Rainfire. I'll shoot him a text.
There you go. There you go. I love that.
Man, this has been fantastic. I love these episodes because it gives me like a solid place to put all my thoughts on one character, and I will never fucking forget him now, even though I'm okay if he never comes back either. If he blew up in the Celestial Golem,
Selene ate him
for lunch, and that's all we need, you know? Or he shows up in like a random sword panel as like one of the 40 mutants that's working on the space station. You know, that's all we need.
There you go. Or in Dead X-Men, which just came out recently, where like they're exploring a different reality where one of the Sinisters is trying to get to Ascension, and there's Rainfire for some reason. Why not?
Interesting potential. Now I want to talk more about Sunspot more than anything, and some of the characters from the Mutant Liberation Front I love too. But I'm also going to challenge myself to do a Damocles Foundation episode sometime, because we skirted past a lot of that, and it's actually really interesting stories.
Yeah.
Kaelin Bhatia, thank you for your time and talents today. This has been a joy to just hang and vibe. I would love if you would share with our listeners where they can find you online. And do you have anything you want to plug? We're going to put this out on Valentine's Day. Nothing says Valentine's Day like Rainfire.
Well, on Valentine's Day, me and the boys in the podcast are going to go see Madam Web, which looks unhinged AF. Like, who thought this movie was a good idea? But I may get intoxicated and may go see it, and we may do a review of it. But Homo Superior is the name of my podcast. It's five of us, five gay men based in DC, dishing about the X-Men and the MCU weekly. Look for smart analysis and dumb jokes. You can find this wherever podcasts can be found: iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud. SoundCloud. And we have a social presence on Twitter. It's Homo Superior X, which is funny because Twitter is now called X. So I guess we were a little bit like prescient there. And on Instagram, it's Homo Superior Podcast. So look for us there. We share dumb memes. We create our own dumb memes. We love interacting with folks who listen to us, and we call our fans little homos. So Chad, one of our favorite little homos.
I always go with vibes. Whenever I listen to your show, I feel like I'm sitting at a table in a coffee shop and you five are at the table over, and I'm just kind of eavesdropping on your hilarious conversation, but you don't notice me there. That's how I feel when I listen to your show.
Can I tell you, like, that is so funny, because the first review we ever got is, it's like going to Harry's Hideaway down in Westchester and overhearing the X-Men just dish, and they're all gay. That's what our podcast was described as, like, in the first 2 to 3 months of our podcast. And I was like, this is exactly what I want. This is great.
I love that we live in a world where there are podcasts that are gay called Grey Malkin Lane, Cerebro, and Homo Superior. It makes me extremely happy. Now we need a Harry's Hideaway show. So someone take the reins.
let that be our big crossover show. Like, that's like, you know, when we have like our big events.
I would love that. And I would love to come hang with you guys anytime. I'm also going to get drunk and watch Madam Web. So if you need an extra voice, call me up. Demanda and I are going to do a Madam Web episode on this channel specifically because of the movie. And I just reread all the characters' appearances. That old fucking lady sitting on the whatever. Oh, it's just Destiny, but worse. We'll talk about it. Not a fan.
Give me an old lady, like a Golden Girl, you know, in spandex. I'm there.
Give
I'm
me
so
Destiny.
Happy.
I don't need Madam Web. Madam Web can go to hell. lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos, but Kayla, you can follow me if you want. But on the show, you can follow us at @GrayMalkin_Lane. We've got a Discord, we've got an Instagram, and we have a fantastic TikTok happening right now, which I'm very excited about. On the main show immediately after this, we'll be jumping into the first appearance of Garak the Petrified Man from Astonishing Tales number 2. My guests on that episode are Liana Kangas, Sarah Gailey, and Marvel editor Alana Smith. We have a lovely time. It's already recorded. Thanks everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this Rainfire episode, and thank you especially to Mr. Kaelin Bhatia. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.